Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.
Q is about conversation.
If we're really concerned about ending poverty, we've got to be more concerned about creating justice.
Our cultural products as Christians need to both defy and resonate with the culture.
And God's doing amazing things. His church is expanding. His church is growing.
It's not what's the purpose of my life. It's what is the purpose that's been assigned.
Stay curious. Think well. Advance good. This is Q.
Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons. With Gabe, I'm Paul Perreault from Faith Radio. Are people of faith part of our culture's problems or part of the solutions to meet needs? A recent survey said 46% of Americans feel religion is a problem in our society. Some very negative feelings expressed. A lot of people think that if religious communities were to go away, government services would just step up and take over much of the work charities have been doing. However, in light of the recovery efforts with Hurricanes Irma and Harvey, it's been congregations, faith-based businesses, charities that have been doing the lion's share of the cleanup. FEMA fully admits recovery would be nearly impossible without faith-based organizations. And Gabe, they're not the only government agency who realizes this.
You know, nothing underscores this more than I remember a time when I was invited to be a part of a conversation about social impact and how faith communities were doing that. And it was a meeting taking place at the White House in the middle of the Obama administration years. And in that conversation, what became very apparent was that the government relies heavily on these religiously oriented, faith-motivated organizations to accomplish a lot of what the government now sees as its responsibility. Now, we could have a bigger debate and argument about whether this is government responsibility or not, but certainly in modern times, governments have taken the responsibility to try to care for the least of these, something the church throughout history was actually more well known for and much more intricately involved in. But as you look at our time now, we're still intricately involved in it, but it doesn't get the kind of PR in the press that you would think. And so therefore, a lot of Americans, especially younger generations, now are questioning whether faith has any kind of role to play in public life. And yet, when you start to do the research, you start to see that, man, faith is an incredible motivator to accomplish a lot of good in the world. Well, in just a moment, you're going to hear from a couple of experts. Dr. Brian Grimm, who's the president of the Religious Freedom and Business Foundation, and then Byron Johnson, who's the director of the Institute for Studies of Religion at Baylor University. And you're going to hear from them, and a little discussion we're going to have around this research where I want you to hear what's happening on the research side of this, what kind of impact faith-based organizations are having, and how we can think about this as conversations move forward in our society where people actually have much bigger questions about this. And so let's listen in to my conversation with them at Q around the halo effect.
Brian, you're the president of the Religious Freedom and Business Foundation, and you're a leading expert on socioeconomic impact, as we've just seen from a lot of what you were just describing. At a moment in American life where it seems like people aren't sure really what role religion should play, why was it so important for you to conduct this study at this moment?
Three reasons. One is the media often covers religion, what they consider news or the failures of religion. When religion does good, that's not news.
Right.
Second is that there are many people in government that are looking for information that helps them make a case why religious freedom is important. And when you can see the good religion does, I mean, that's really the purpose of having religious freedom, setting people faith free to do good. And the third, as believers, you know, we don't like to let our left hand know what our right hand is giving. So there's a certain amount of modesty, humility, service, but it's often useful to take an accounting of the impact of the work we're doing. So really serving these three communities, helping media have a positive story, it was widely covered and positively as well.
So for a room full of leaders, many leading organizations sometimes feeling defensive that they have to apologize for their faith and the role that it does to motivate them in American society. I mean, what are a few of the significant findings that you observed?
Well, I think what was surprising for many people is just the impact of congregations, the work at the local level. So more than 344,000 congregations and providing all kinds of services. So when most people think of charity, they think of, you know, the Salvation Army or, you know, some aid group, but so much is being done through local congregations. The other is that most of the work done in congregations in terms of social service has an outward focus, not just caring for the say, shut-ins or people in our own congregation. Mm-hmm. So 320,000 congregations help recruit volunteers for things like the Red Cross, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. So that, I think, is something to realize, that the work that we do is not just, you know, for our own benefit. It's really for our society's benefit.
Will you share with people where they can find out more on the slide?
Yeah, so you can find out more at faithcounts.com/report. And the full report is there as well.
So, Byron Johnson, you're the founding director of the Institute of Studies of Religion and a distinguished professor of social sciences at Baylor University. I feel like you kind of have this perspective of looking in to, you know, help us practically understand how this is applied to something most Americans recognize as one of the big challenges in American cities, which is homelessness. Can you tell us a little bit about what you found from this study in that?
We looked at 11 cities across the United States from different regions of the country. This study was funded by the McClellan Foundation and the Murdoch Trust. I really have been aware of the issue, but I've never really dug down deep. And so when you go to these communities and look up close and personal what they're doing, it's staggering. And so what we found is that of all the homeless emergency shelter beds in the country, on average, the faith-based organizations are providing a 60% of those beds. And so this is a huge economic savings to our government that these groups really don't get much recognition for.
Right.
So if you look at the value, which we did ROI analysis, I think you heard that term earlier, return on investment. We're also doing cost-benefit analysis. Going back to what Brian is trying to gauge, what does this mean to the economics of our country? We found that these organizations are saving about $119 million that taxpayers would have had to pay. But the real beautiful thing, and I'm not telling you
and this,
all...
This was in 11 cities.
It's just in 11
right,
cities.
You specifically studied this on.
Yes, and we only looked at the Salvation Army, Gospel Rescue Missions, Catholic Charities, Lutheran Social Services, several others that are well known. We didn't look at all of the FBOs. We didn't have the wherewithal to do all of that. And as Brian mentioned, we have 350,000 congregations. We didn't look at one of them. That's another study that needs to take place. So you would be correct to say that we underestimated the value of faith-based organizations.
And I think that's an important point for us to hear. I mean, to understand, you know, one of the things in a research study we released last year that we understood is that most Americans, those who are non-Christians, for example, when you ask them, what do they think the one thing Christians should be doing in society, they say providing blankets, shelter, food, clothing for the poor. It's like the obvious thing, and part of what your study is showing is a lot of goods happening there.
Yeah.
There's not necessarily a PR department out there communicating that, and that's just not part of how people of faith do their work and do their services. But tell us how you have found faith-based motivated organizations to be effective in how they respond to homelessness, because some would argue that, hey, faith-based organizations are just in there to proselytize. They're just trying to get people converted to their faith.
Yeah.
But is that what you found when you looked at this?
No, what we found was just these holistic ministries that didn't just look at people that didn't have a residence. They looked at people that not only needed a job, but people that maybe needed counseling, people that had an addiction. There are governmental programs that will help you get a residence, but they might not do anything for your addiction issues. So the faith-based organizations have this holistic faith-based. It's not just faith in name. It really is faith-based. They do share the gospel with people. They don't force it on people, but they make it available to them. And so I think this is counterintuitive for people that aren't familiar with these groups, and they think that they are all about proselytizing. But as Brian said, they're about serving.
Yeah.
And so that's the beautiful thing. And they collaborate. They don't collaborate with just other faith-based organizations. They do collaborate with secular organizations. They collaborate with governmental agencies. And everywhere we went, we heard a mayor say to us, we don't know what we would do if it weren't for the Gospel Rescue Mission or if it weren't for the Salvation Army. We turned to them and government groups referring people to faith-based organizations.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. We don't have the PR campaign, Gabe. That's why you're here, I think, to help us get the word out there that faith-based groups are making a difference. And, you know, they actually deserve a pat on the back. And I think what we need is more research to help us figure out how they can even do it better.
Yeah, and the fact that this study doesn't even look at congregations, which I know so many of you, that's a lot of where your giving goes. And then through those churches, there's a lot of work that's happening in all of your communities and all of your cities. You're right, there's more work to be done to show it. But I think the motivation to show it is we're at a moment culturally, even though it's a pluralistic society, all faiths have a seat at the table. And I know you studied not just Christian organizations, but those motivated by other religions. But the point is, we do need to get the word out. People need to understand, because a lot of people just don't. They go, look, if you guys just stop doing it, we think the government would just do it. But if you talk to somebody in government, they'll be the first one to say, no, no, no way. We can't do it. We need these partnerships on the ground. Just either one of you, in sort of taking this away, what did you see as maybe a best practice of the types of organizations who were thinking this way, who were engaging this way, where they were having to bridge that kind of faith and public square divide?
Well, one of the things I saw was in the research, we did research on congregations, is that most congregations have cooperative projects with other, not only congregations, but the public sector, other charities. So I think that's one thing is really the strength, is the congregations are the glue that holds society together, not just because of the people, but even their organizational connections are important.
Yeah, that's good.
And Gabe, what I would say is that the social innovation coming out of the faith community is staggering. And I think it's because people are inspired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God gets the credit because people are coming up with unique ways that others are looking to. And I think this is how the church can lead.
Well, Byron, how can people see more about the homelessness project and research?
They can go to our website at BaylorISR.org.
Well, I just want to thank you for your work. I know it lots of times goes unnoticed behind the scenes doing this hard work of research and probably always wondering, do people ever see the light of day? Well, today, 1,800 leaders in this room are seeing that. I know it's encouraging them as they think about what they're going to do when they go back home. So let's thank our two leaders here.
Regardless of the press faith communities get, I hope you feel affirmed about the importance of what your church is or should be to your city. But is the city important to the health of your church, your faith? This seems like the flip side to our discussion of the halo effect. And in this next part of Q Ideas this weekend, we want to highlight a portion of a message given at a past Q conference by Rick McKinley of Imago Deo Church in Portland, Oregon. Imago Deo has been strategically engaging in a very secular community. And as you listen to Rick, you'll hear about the importance of the city to his church.
There was a man by the name of Leslie Newbegin who wrote a book called The Gospel in a Pluralist Society. And he talked about the fact that the gospel isn't necessarily owned by the church, but it stands between church and culture. And the gospel goes into a culture, and it contextualizes itself to that culture. So every culture has windows of redemption where the gospel preaches good news. And every culture has windows of offense, opposition, where the gospel is an affront. And out of that culture comes this new community called the church. And the church then is sent back into the culture. But one of the key missing points, I think, for all of us is that we forget that the only way we're supposed to go back into the culture is through the gospel. This morning, I want to talk about four ways that God uses the city to save the church. The first one is truth. The culture's questions continue to help us to discover what we believe and what the best way to talk about this is. When we remove ourselves from culture, we begin to reduce what the gospel is. We come up with oversimplistic answers for really complicated questions. And God's genius of throwing us into a mission where we're completely dependent on Him and the gospel forces us to say, how will we hold to our truth? How will we be able to speak that truth into the culture in a way that they understand it? And those questions that the culture is asking and the issues that culture faces keep us from oversimplifying the gospel, making it a pithy statement that you subscribe to, rather than God's revelation that is shaping and redeeming and changing the city. The city forces us to think and act theologically about the gospel so that we keep ourselves from sinning. Now, that might sound kind of bizarre, but the truth is, to retreat from culture and to define the gospel with insider language that the culture can't understand is sin. It's what Jesus confronted the Pharisees over. At the same time, to thrust ourselves in the culture, to remove the offense of the cross, is to be consumed by the culture. And that's sin as well. And the gospel becomes this tightrope that we stand on between church and culture, realizing that we have to speak this truth. And some of it is good news right away, but then the other piece, the exclusivity of Christ, gender, sexuality, all of these issues that we have to try to figure out, how is the biblical revelation going to be spoken in a way that's loving and yet still truthful? The other way is identity. To recognize that the people in our congregations are not resources to be used, but rather these are people who are building the city. We recognize that we are the city. We have a seat at the table as much as anybody else does, and the people within our pews are participating in the life of the city, which forces us to understand that we're not sitting here deciding if we're for the city or against the city, but we're just declaring that we are the city. And so we need to create the city, shape the city for the glory of Christ, for the display of the kingdom. The church then is sent. And one of the greatest sort of theological themes that gets missed by very conservative theological churches is that the church is the sent people of God. And so we begin to realize we have to think that they're coming Sunday and they're worshiping, but they're being sent into these different sectors of society to announce the reign of God, which means that we need to be incredibly humble people. For the kingdom to be displayed in the city, the church must believe and act as one body, which is really difficult because last time I checked, we came up with lots of different versions of what we are supposed to believe. And so it forces us to say, what do we actually believe? What do we really believe? What can we all unite around? How can we be Jesus' answer to that prayer? Father, may they be one as we are one. If we're thinking competitively about the church next door and how we can beat the attendance wars or whatever, it totally destroys us. But when we look at the city and say 1.9 million people with massive needs and we're forced into this place to announce the reign of God, every church needs to win and we need to all help each other get there. And so we find this common ground that we say we believe, and we aren't reducing our convictions, but we're standing together in a very humble posture. So let me give you two portraits of the church. One is that the church exists for itself. We don't think this perhaps intentionally, but we begin to act like this. And pastors exist to build the church, and therefore the disciples in the congregation, they simply exist as resources for church building. Now, I know that nobody wants to say, oh yeah, that's what I do. But the truth is, that is how we often act. One of the problems that I've seen that comes out of Q is that as pastors, we sit here and we listen to these amazing stories of what people are doing in social entrepreneurs. And you're like, I want to do that. And that's not cool at all. But the truth is, your job is to find those people and to disciple them and unleash them and cheer them on and realize that God's going to use them in some really unique and beautiful ways to announce the kingdom. So what if we rethought the paradigm? What if we came to the conviction that the church exists for the world and therefore pastors exist to equip disciples and disciples exist to announce the reign of Christ in the public square? That's a very different picture. But one of the things that we begin to dream about and to imagine then is how, rather than looking at that businessman and saying, well, this would be a great person to be on the building committee, to say, how can I come alongside him to help form his soul so that he would actually think about business through a kingdom lens, that he would see different bottom lines than just economic. There's all kinds of things that would make that type of business a city on a hill. So we have to rethink how we understand the kingdom. The kingdom definitely shows up in congregational worship on Sunday mornings, but it also ultimately is supposed to be breaking in all over the city, in every sector, in every corner. And the way it breaks in is through unleashed disciples who are sold out for Jesus Christ. Which means that by sending us into the city, what Christ is doing is calling us back into the gospel. And he's calling us back into the gospel so that Christ can be the one that builds his church. And we then get to display the kingdom and announce the reign of God. One of the major issues that we will have to lay down in order to fulfill this dream is power. How the church understands power, how it understands its influence. We have to look at our power, whether that's nickels and noses, buildings, influence, whatever it would be, and we have to lay that down at the foot of the cross and realize that Christ has given us power to use as he used power, which was to serve with. This all-powerful God takes on weak humanity, goes to the cross in death, and then overcomes. And then he speaks to us, sending us into the world to say, do that. And so what I'm talking about here is very specific. Who you hire, what you do with your budget, how many staff do you have that are focused on the city and deploying people into the city? How much money are you willing to pony up and give away to city initiatives? And all of a sudden, the room gets really quiet because it's like, as long as we're spreading bark dust, that's pretty cool, right? But then when it comes to actually laying down those power structures, the problem is the church is very good at looking at how the world would misuse power. But we're not very good at looking at ourselves and realize that as well as systemic evil exists within the world, it also exists within the church. And it's very easy for us to begin to build our own kingdoms and slap Christ's name on it and go, yay, look what we did for Jesus. And the whole time, what the ethos is competition. And it's being against the people. It's creating the people who are right and declaring to the world that they're wrong. And it's using God as a source of power to complete an agenda that really may not have anything to do with the kingdom. And so this conviction that Newbegin brings to us that I think is so biblical and streamed through the New Testament is a conviction that we are sent back into the gospel to recognize our own propensities for evil. We stand in solidarity with all of the other systemic issues to say we need the cross as much as anybody else. And so that humility that's willing to lay down power, that's willing to say we will serve without any expectation that this will promote my organization. Because believe it or not, people have picked up on the bait and switch. And we start training them for this in high school. Like, come to the pizza feed and end with an altar call. And they're like, wow, I thought we were having pizza, but... And the church does this, right? We use our influence, and many times we're using it power not to serve, but to promote our own thing. And that's not to say that we don't preach the gospel and we don't do evangelism and we do all those things. We have every right to tell our story in the public sphere and everything that we do at Imago as anybody else has the right to tell their story. And so we negotiate, you know, those sticky issues. But at the end of the day, we have to recognize that the grace of God has really been to save us from ourselves, to save us from building our own thing, and to call us to say we're not going to build the church, but we're going to dream about how can we be the church? And how can we be the church that displays the kingdom in the world?
I hope you found that interesting to just better understand how the effect of religion really does contribute to the good of society. And this is particularly relevant because in our work with Q, this is one of the things we're trying to continue to motivate and catalyze in cities, not only in American life, but around the world. And, you know, one of the great ways we do that every fall, we do an event called Q Commons. And Q Commons is our way of starting to convene leaders. Many are Christians, some are not, to come together in their cities and say, how can we be educated on some of the things happening in our city that are broken, that we need to be a part of renewing and restoring, or things that are going wonderfully, but a lot of people don't know about and need to be more aware of and get involved in. And this all happens on one night, on October 26th. You're able to come together with people in your city who care about what we were just discussing and be a part of it. Get involved in it. Make this a cause that you're going to participate in. And so you can learn more about that at qcommons.com. You can go in there and you can find the actual city that it's taking place in. Or for those of you who are listening and you look and you realize, man, nothing's happening in my city. How do I participate in Q Commons? There's still time to actually host Q Commons as a private simulcast for people in your community. You can do that at your church. You can do that at your home. You can do that in any type of location where you could actually bring people together and hear talks that are simultaneous happening globally for this community of Christian leaders to better understand what's happening in our world and how we can be a part of healing our divided nation. We've certainly been touched in America by seeing what's taken place after the Houston flooding that took place from the Hurricane Harvey, and again in Florida after Hurricane Irma coming through, where you actually see the good of humanity coming together to serve one another, to help one another, neighbor helping neighbor, people providing supplies for one another, people sacrificing generators because, you know, you see a guy in a Walmart buying a generator and says, no, I'm going to give this to this lady even though it's the last generator because her husband needs a respirator. And that's the human spirit. That's what binds us together. But you don't often hear about that a lot. Well, at Q Commons, that's what this night's about, is each of us participating and being kind of a healing balm. Be a part of that with us. Go to qcommons.com. Participate either by buying a ticket for yourself or a few friends to come out and just be a part of that night. But if you can't do that, think about hosting the private simulcast, and you can learn more about that at qcommons.com/private simulcast. Some of our presenters, David Brooks from the New York Times. We've got Propaganda, who's an amazing spoken word artist and presenter. And then Dr. Kara Powell talking about how to confront the division that technology's bringing in our society. So it's going to be really insightful, really interesting. So with that, I hope you have a wonderful week. I hope the halo effect has encouraged you to understand the contribution your church is making to the community and to continue to drive that narrative forward. Tell other people these stories. More and more people need to hear these stories so that they do understand the impact that faith is having in our cities and in our communities. This show is made possible in partnership with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.
Thank you for listening to the Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thank you for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.